Welcome back to the eSpecial Needs Podcast. I'm your host, Catherine Blanner. In season two of the eSpecial Needs Podcast, we'll be addressing care for the whole person, focusing on early intervention and school-based care resources. We've noticed that it can be difficult to find relevant and researched information for all stages of life, so our next season is focused on that. Here at eSpecial Needs, we want you to be able to not only get the products you need for your loved ones, but also help answer some of the questions that you might have along the way. Whether you're a parent, teacher, caregiver, therapist, or sibling, we want you to be able to help you get the information that you need while you're on the go. Today on the eSpecial Needs Podcast, we have Christina Nara-Simmon. She's the director for Region 2 of the St. Louis County Area First Steps, and she's going to walk you through the process of your kiddo just getting diagnosed and what you should do with that diagnosis and your feelings about it. Without further ado, welcome Christina. So kind of take us through what parents might be feeling in that moment of diagnosis.
Yeah, sure. I think it varies from person to person. People have different experiences in their life. And so it's different for everybody, I think. But a lot of things that parents might go through could be confusion, not really understanding what does this mean. So I think sometimes when a child gets diagnosed, a parent, we occasionally encounter parents who don't remember them being told that their child had a diagnosis. We might get medical records that show that, and they have no idea. Really? And generally, that happens as a result of maybe the parents just couldn't process it at the time, or they didn't understand it, or they were told a lot of information at one time and it just didn't stick. So I think there's confusion and misunderstanding sometimes. And then, of course, parents will go through a grief process, just like anybody would with something that is hard for them.
Yeah. Can you kind of speak more to a grief process? Is that kind of like a normal thing for parents to experience in that situation?
Yeah. I mean, I think it definitely is a normal thing. It's it comes along with the territory of, thinking there's that poem, and I don't know if you've ever heard it before, but there's this poem about going to Holland and how.
Yeah, I have.
And so I think that sometimes parents have an idea or an expectation of what it's going to be like when they're a parent, and this is what my child is going to be like. And anybody who is a parent knows that that's not really how it works, even if their child isn't diagnosed. But if a child receives a diagnosis, then it can be extra hard, I think, for a parent to feel like, their expectations are not being met, and that maybe they didn't even realize they had those expectations up front. And it's just, it's a hard thing to kind of digest, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm sure that like one of the things is that parents might also be feeling guilty for feeling that. Do you think that is, or maybe I'm just wrong?
Yeah, I think guilt is a normal part of grief. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So, like, what should a parent do to kind of, like, process those feelings in a purposeful way?
Yeah, I think, so, I was thinking about this, actually, when I was driving over here. and I think a big thing that can be helpful for parents is to be connected with other parents who have had similar experiences as to what they're having. Parents that can understand maybe what they're going through, they've been through it already, or that they're going through it together at the same time. I just think that those connections are really important. And also trying to, hopefully, when parents are receiving a diagnosis, that professional that's providing the diagnosis is giving them resources, is referring them to places that can help them, like the First Steps program, if they're, birth to age 3, or other programs that are available out there. But I think, I think those are probably the biggest things, is just that making connections with other people, because I think when you're in that moment of getting news that you weren't expecting, it can feel isolating and like you're alone. I think parents could feel like they're alone, and to try to reach out and find people that they can connect with.
How would you recommend a parent kind of going about that to find people who are in a similar situation?
Yeah, that can be really hard. I think there's a variety of avenues. They can talk to the professional that did the diagnosing and ask them if they know of any groups or platforms or places where they can reach out and connect to people. And of course, with the wonderful internet we have available, people can find all sorts of things online as far as groups to connect with. There's virtual things, there's in-person things. So I think there's a lot of different ways to do that.
What advice do you have for parents whose child just got diagnosed?
Gosh, that's hard. Because again, I think, like I said earlier, it's very situational. It's hard to say that a parent should do something specific or should feel something specific, because I don't think there's anything that anybody should do in these situations. But I do think, again, it kind of goes back to that, sense of community, reaching out, just even if it's to family members, even if it's to people that you're close to that don't know what you're going through, haven't experienced it before. And I'm a big proponent of counseling. And so if a parent is open to that, I think that that should definitely be something parents should do, even if it's short term, to kind of work through those things.
What should parents worry about with their kid? What do you think?
parents are going to worry. I'm a parent myself. And so I can say, I worry about a lot of things that I never thought I would worry about before I had kids. I think maybe I don't want to say parents shouldn't worry, but I wouldn't want to give them anything else to worry about,
Yeah.
So I think worry may be a different word. Something for parents to think about is just, what are the avenues that they can take to get the help that they need, the support that they need? So their child needs support. They need support. Their extended family members might need support. Their child's daycare provider might need support. And so rather than worry about, I think parents one thing that they can think about is, what are the things, the steps that I need to take to get that?
So let's kind of go through those steps.
Mm-hmm.
So you work four first steps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of what steps do you guys provide, and how does your organization help parents?
So we help the birth to three population, and we are funded federally and state by both. And contract is actually through the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. So they fund us just like they fund early childhood special education and public education. And our role as the system point of entry is to receive referrals for kids that are birthed to age three where there's a suspicion of a disability or a delay. We do an intake process. We figure out if they're eligible for our program. We have very steep eligibility criteria. And for kids who are not eligible for our program, we do refer them out to other resources. If for children who are eligible, we hook them up with services. So we have a whole process where we write an individualized family service plan for the child and their family. We have occupational therapists, physical therapists, speech therapists, special instructors, dietitians, a whole host of people, assistive technology providers like eSpecial Needs.
Is it kind of an IEP almost, kind of? Or
it is similar to IEP. There is differences. So with First Steps, the IFSP is very much geared and written around the families. What are their current resources? What are their main concerns? And what priorities do they have? And so whereas an IEP is designed to help a child be successful in a classroom setting in school, the IFSP is designed to help a child in their everyday life. So even if it's, the family can't ever go grocery shopping because there's a massive meltdown every time they go and they have to leave their cart behind in the store with all the stuff in it and go home because of it. Our role and our goal is to help families with those things that are hard and to help give them strategies to help make them better.
So you put them in touch with people that can help them do that?
Yes. Yeah, okay. That's what our therapists do.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love therapists.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on, kind of. So what should parents kind of like not worry about with a kid with special needs? I know that's kind of like a different weird like flip side question, mm-hmm. but...
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. So again, everything is very individualized. It's hard, I don't want to tell parents they should worry about things. I also, you know, or shouldn't worry about things. But I think that it can be very overwhelming in the beginning. So a child gets a diagnosis, the family is sometimes, depending on how well hooked up they are with resources, they might be floundering a bit. And they're not sure which direction to go, what to do, what's the best resource for them. And I think, you know, one thing that a lot of parents of children with special needs might say, and, you know, who've had that experience for a while might say, you know, not to worry, that it's going to work out, that there is support, that there is help. And so that might be something I would say, you know, not to worry about, even though I know parents are worried. Yeah, they worry.
Just take a breather.
Yes.
It's going to be fine.
Yes, it will be okay.
Yeah. I remember some kind of like quote that was like, it was really silly, but it was in high school. Somebody shared this quote that was like, it's going to be okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's kind of like a faulty comparison, but.
No, that's a great comparison.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's a great comparison.
That's good. Just chiming in with
you. Yeah.
Okay. So what are proper next steps to diagnosis oftentimes?
So you mean once there's a diagnosis, then what's the next thing for parents to do? So if they're, if a child is within that birth to three category, definitely getting in touch with their First Steps program. And also just following up with things that they're, whoever gave the diagnosis is probably going to make recommendations too. So it could be their pediatrician. It could be they went to see a neurologist. It could be they went to see a psychologist. Whoever has made that diagnosis is probably going to have recommendations. And just, you know, I think the next steps are following through and following up with those things. It can be very hard and overwhelming. And especially if a child has a significant amount of needs that require a lot of doctor's visits, therapy visits, and that can overwhelm parents. And so I think just trying to take those things one step at a time, but following up on those things is really important. That's how early intervention happens. I think kids slip through that crack of early intervention sometimes when their family gets too overwhelmed and maybe they didn't get put in touch with the right person or the right people that can kind of help guide them through that.
This is kind of like a silly off-topic question. Maybe not silly, but just an interesting off-topic question. But do you ever work with kids in foster care?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
How, mm-hmm. Like, is there anything different that is usually about that or?
Nope. No, our eligibility criteria for our program is based solely on diagnosis and delay, amount of delay. So
I was just curious. Yeah. Because I feel like that would play out very differently sometimes than mm-hmm. it does if it's just like two parents and their biological child.
Yeah. We do get referrals for kids who, so there's a mandate that if a child has, it's the child abuse, I'm not going to say it right. I don't know. It's CAPTA is the acronym. It's okay. Child Abuse Prevention Treatment Act, I believe is what it's called. And so for children who have, there is a suspicion that there has been abuse or neglect and they are in care, there's a mandate that they get referred to the early intervention program.
Really?
Sometimes those kids aren't eligible for our program just because, you know, it's an automatic referral. They just make it, but there's no concerns for their development at that point in time. And sometimes there is. So, yeah.
So let's talk kind of more about eligibility. Because you kind of mentioned that you had strict guidelines for it.
Yeah. So as far as the state of Missouri goes, we're up there. As far as the rest of the country, you know, we have pretty tight eligibility criteria. Kids have to be pretty delayed to be in our program. And so there's a list of diagnoses that's on the, and it can be found. So if people go to the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education's website, I can't just spit it out right now because it's not that simple as far as the link to the website goes, but just looking for Missouri First Steps. Mm-hmm. And there is eligibility criteria listed there so people can actually see all the diagnoses that are on there. So a child would have to have a specific diagnosis that's on that list. And some examples of that are cerebral palsy, autism, macrocephaly, certain viruses that children might be exposed to in utero, like CMV, cytomegalovirus. And there's a lot of other things as well. And then we also have developmental criteria, which is a child has to have a minimum of a half age delay in at least one area of development. So either social, emotional, adaptive, which is self-help skills, physical, cognitive, or communication. And on top of that, a child, if they have hearing loss or if they have a certain type of vision loss, then they're also automatically eligible for First Steps.
eSpecial Needs is a proud retailer of Convaid. Convaid manufactures high-performance, easy-to-use, attractive mobility products like strollers, wheelchairs, and other mobility aids for a spectrum of life stages. Convaid items are easy to use for the caregiver and the user, and offer pristine support and customization options. For a limited time, receive your choice of one of two accessories free with the purchase of a Convaid item from eSpecial Needs. To purchase Convaid, go to eSpecialNeeds.com. Convaid Vivo is not included in this promotion. Free shipping available for all U.S. shipments within 48 contiguous states only. Not available for Hawaii or Alaska. International shipping must be calculated after ordering. Remember to consult your physician or therapist before purchasing.
Kids that don't meet that criteria, mm-hmm. but are still kind of in a position where they just got a diagnosis and they are a bit delayed, where do they go? This might be out of your scope, but.
So, well, we do refer. So okay. We will, and if a child is close to age three, a lot of times we will ask the parents if they want us to, on their behalf, make a referral to the school district for them, or if they just want to have that information and they make it on their own. So once they hit three, they can try to, you know, see if they're eligible for early childhood special education. But we do, we refer, we have a list of resources that we'll give families. Some families have have good insurance where they can utilize that to get therapy visits. Some families want to do private pay. Some just want to take their child to maybe a group or something like that. And so we have just a list of resources that we give to families. And it's private entities that we work with regularly. So
sounds really helpful.
And some public too. Yeah, there are some other ones that are publicly funded.
All right. So how can you make sure that your kiddo is prepared for school?
Well,
big question.
That is a big question. Yeah. I think a big piece of that is social. And so parents, we often will share information with families as we're working with them about programs where they can take if, like, let's say, for example, a child doesn't go to childcare, they're home with a parent or something all the time. They don't have a lot of interactions with other children their age because there's, nobody around or nobody in the family that's that age. So we will sometimes, and our therapists even will sometimes recommend like Mother's Day Out programs or preschool programs that might be helpful in kind of building that social aspect of it. We really, First Steps are like gearing kids up to be three.
Yeah.
And move on to early childhood special education if they're eligible. Mm-hmm. And so the way we kind of try to help that with that transition is that we work very closely with all the districts and the school districts in our area. And we actually have a meeting with the family and the local school district representative that comes, and we all go to the family's home. And it's part of like an IFSP meeting where the families learn about their school district and learn about, how testing occurs and what that might look like if they were eligible and that sort of thing. So.
Yeah. So you gear them up socially, and then other like things that are kind of expected, what else would be expected? Not expected, but how can you prepare a kid for school better?
For school?
Yeah.
So I guess there's academic things, obviously, which is not something that we focus on so much. But I guess speaking as a parent, I could say, you know, they're just being aware of developmental milestones and like where they should be. And if they're not meeting them, to be reaching out and kind of making sure that you get that help. There is also this other wonderful program called Parents as Teachers.
My mom did that.
Did she? Yeah. Was she a parent educator?
Yeah. Cool. My mom's an early childhood special education teacher. She's like currently finishing up her master's at UMSL right now as well. So she's very familiar with Parents as Teachers. It's super cool.
Awesome.
I think I was also parent as teachers taught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You probably had a parent educator when you were young. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I did with my kids. And I actually was a parent educator for about a year myself. But it's a nice, you know, the parent educators actually come in and they kind of give the families information on, okay, this is what you should expect next at this age. And here's what your child's doing now. Here's kind of the next steps of development. And I feel like Parents as Teachers is such a great resource for all of our families. I mean, children who are in first steps, we still recommend to them to contact their local, you know, school district and get signed up with Parents as Teachers. And Parents as Teachers will take them through kindergarten, I believe. So when they actually hit kindergarten, then they're there, you know, and answering parents' questions and giving them, and they're part of the school district. And so they are very familiar with, like, what some of the expectations are when you start school.
Probably also, like, on a communicative level for a parent in that position with, like, a kiddo that has a diagnosis that they might be afraid of. It might be easier to, like, hear that kind of information from a parent who's kind of like a peer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. There's some organizations, and I'm unfortunately, I can't think of the name of them off the top of my head right now, but there are organizations out there that we come in contact with that they do have what they call sort of like peer mentors. So parents who maybe have adult children even who they've been through the whole gamut from birth all the way through graduating high school, and they connect with parents who are more new to this experience and can kind of help them navigate things.
Yeah, it sounds like it's almost like imperative to build a community.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it makes a huge difference for our families whenever they have that. When families are isolated and feeling isolated, it makes it a lot harder to, I think, overcome some of the overwhelming aspects of things that they have to move through.
It takes a village, man.
It does take a village. It takes a village for parents of children that don't have special needs. So
it takes
even more of a village, I think, whenever you have a child diagnosed with a special needs.
Yeah. That's amazing, though, that there are resources out there.
Yeah.
Because I
Yeah, there's a lot of great resources available.
That's really good to hear, honestly. So in any state in the United States, what is provided for at a state level for children with Down syndrome, disabilities, autism, developmental delays, different things like that?
Well, so thanks to IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, there are children that have those diagnoses and others do have access to services. And so every state in the United States has an early intervention program. Everyone is a little bit different. Each state gets to decide what the eligibility criteria is and what it looks like. But there is access to those public programs for kids who are eligible. And then beyond that, of course, is the free and appropriate public education. And so children have that, also have that access to that when they are in school. So when they go to kindergarten, they then can have an IEP if they're eligible based on their delay or their diagnosis. And so again, in every state in the U.S., that is something that's available for children and their families.
So how can parents of children who are neurotypical work on better integration for kiddos with disabilities or special needs? just in daily life?
So you're asking a parent who doesn't have a child with special needs and how they can
like support parents.
Support other parents
who have kids with special needs. Yeah.
That's a great question.
It really is. Because that's the flip side of the coin. That's really what's going to like start integrating change in our society. Because I think special needs communities have oftentimes really well thought out plans and stuff. But people who are neurotypical, we don't always have the interaction or ability or maybe like the opportunity to invite people from a different community.
I think we have come a long way in with regards to that, and inclusion I think is a huge part of that, and there are still I feel a lot of parents out there that they just have never had exposure to anything other than their neurotypical children or children, other people's children who are neurotypical. I think one thing is just for parents, I think when they have somebody close to them that's going through that experience, it makes a big difference for them. So maybe that is not their child, but somebody that they love and care for has a child who has special needs, and they're kind of, living it alongside their loved one. But for parents, I guess, I'm trying to think of the best way to... It is kind of a hard question. It's like, I think my thing is like, okay, educate people, just educate yourselves and get to know other people who aren't having the same experience that you are in life, and kind of get to, help yourself realize that it's different for other people. And there can be tough things that happen. I mean, children, sometimes when you think about the school setting, there can sometimes be like, let's say, a child is having trouble with aggressive behavior and they're in school and another parent, something might happen, or another parent might, they wouldn't necessarily know about it, obviously, because they're of confidentiality. But if something were to happen, that other parent might stop and pause and think, okay, there's a reason that this occurred. And it's not, just because somebody's being mean or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big thing. People educating themselves, listening to podcasts, of course.
Yeah, learning. I think podcasts are really great experiential learning opportunities for everyone.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of podcasts.
Yeah.
Another thing that I feel like, if I may speak to this, I think that is important, is to volunteer.
Yes.
Yeah. So like I was talking about earlier, my mother's an early childhood special education teacher. So my entire life, she would volunteer at the YMCA on Saturdays to like help kids who have special needs or disabilities.
Yeah.
Her and my father both. And they would bring me, and I have 7 younger siblings. They would bring me and all of my siblings, and we'd all work together. But it creates just like a better community.
Yes.
And you have a more holistic mindset.
Yes.
You have a more diverse mindset. You have a more accepting and kind mindset, empathetic. So I think it is important to like put yourself in places where you can interact with people who are different than you.
Yes.
And different doesn't necessarily mean bad.
Yes.
I think that's another thing that I get fed up with about like neurotypical parents, is that they kind of just like live at the end of a cul-de-sac with their neurotypical children, and it's like never experiencing anything different or unique. But diversity is the spice of life.
Yes, it is. And you're right. It's not necessarily bad.
It's not bad.
It's different, and it's misunderstood. Sometimes people have, they have a misunderstanding, I guess, sort of mindset, where if you don't try to put yourself into another person's shoes, or to think about what life is like for somebody who's different from you, then you are very closed off and you're not going to be very understanding.
Yeah, just basic training and empathy.
But I think volunteering is a wonderful idea and thing that would be great for everybody. Should volunteer. Yes, there is a lot of that. And also I think, kids do a lot of the same things. And so they're in soccer, or they're in music lessons, or they're in after school clubs, and they're all related to maybe their particular interests. But I'm just thinking about people that I know, and I don't know a lot of people who stretch outside of that with their kids mm-hmm. and involve their children in volunteer opportunities and doing those sorts of things. Yeah.
Part of me also thinks that that is like, again, it's mostly fear-based because mm-hmm. there's a lot of genuine just kind of like fear of the unknown, yeah. especially in the Midwest.
Yeah.
That's just kind of the mindset that we all have here in the St. Louis bubble is really real.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It really is. So I think that like parents oftentimes, especially neurotypical parents, see their kids as a reflection of themselves. So they're like, okay, I played soccer when I was a kid. My kid's going to play soccer when they're a kid.
Yeah.
And that's just how it's going to be. But I think at the end of the day, that is just... again, creating more fear-based routines. And mm-hmm. that's not a positive way to start yeah. enacting change in our society.
No, it's not. And it also is giving your child, it's not giving your child any gifts. I mean, you feel, you know, it is wonderful to be able to provide for families that are able to, you know, provide for their kids to be able to take soccer lessons or be on a team or in a club, to have instruments and be able to play them. But I just feel like it's a real gift for parents to be able to show their children, like, this is the world. This is not, you know, this little bubble that we live in is not what the world is really about. And whenever you, you know, leave home, it can be shocking.
I can. So,
yeah.
Culture shock, man.
Yep.
So is there anything that I should have asked but didn't?
Oh, my gosh.
Like, anything that I, like... pretend I'm a parent that just got diagnosed with a child and I don't know what I'm doing.
I'll probably think of something after I walk out of this room, but I can't think of anything right now.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But final thoughts?
I'm really glad that you're doing this. This is great. I don't know, like, when I was sitting in, you know, in the car in the parking lot before I came in here, you know, was like, I didn't even know you special needs had a podcast until you messaged me, emailed me. And so I pulled it up and I looked at it. I'm like, oh, there's a whole season available. Mm-hmm. And then it never occurred to me. And you would think working in the field that I work in, to listen to podcasts related to my field, because I listen to podcasts based on other interests that I have. So, or because I want a good laugh or, you know,
yeah, whatever. Sometimes podcasts yeah. are just a good fluffy thing that you need to turn
yes,
on. But
exactly.
I also, like I said, I want to make this kind of like a university of parenting a child with special needs.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And like walk through almost every step.
I think final thoughts would be ask questions for any parent. Ask people questions. So if there's something that you are unsure of, or you don't know if you should be worried about, or if you are worried about something, try, you know, don't be afraid to say it. Don't be afraid to bring it up to a professional, a doctor, whoever, and ask those questions, because I think good questions are like at the root of evolving and changing and getting the support that you need.
Yeah. Incentivizing growth.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I had, so that's a good final thought.
Yeah, it is really good.
Thank you for going on.
Yeah.
This was really fruitful. I'm really
Thanks.
Glad that you came here.
Thanks for having me.
This podcast is hosted and produced by Catherine Blanner with the help of Jason Hinglin Lauderdale. If you liked this podcast, leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts, follow us on Spotify, and share it with your friends. If you want to keep up with us, you can follow eSpecial Needs on social media. On Facebook, we're just eSpecial Needs, on Instagram at eSpecial_needs, and Twitter at eSpecial Needs. Thank you again for listening, and don't forget, you're doing great things.